And so I researched it a little bit. I went to a conference. I heard Dr. Bradstreet speak about it and a Dr. John Hicks. And I was shocked at all the ways it could help children with autism. It affects their nervous system. It affects their brain. It helps their immune system.
How long do you want the drug war to last? Well, that's too long. Dean Becker, drugtruth.net.
It's now time for Open Journal's Community Spotlight, where listeners like you produce your own programs. This airtime is a free service for KPFT listener members, offered to those interested in sharing their knowledge and talent with other listeners. This is also a space to audition new programming. Opinions expressed on Open Journal may not reflect the views of the Pacifica Foundation, its staff, board, or volunteers. Information shared on Open Journal should not take the place of appropriate professional consultation. Now, it's time for Open Journal's Community Spotlight, here on 90.1 KPFT Houston.
Welcome to Open Journal. We thank you very much for joining us today. I'm Dr. Christine Adams, a psychologist in private practice here in Houston. With me today is my colleague, Dr. Joe Bach, also a psychologist in private practice here in Houston. We are members of Healthcare for All Texas. Healthcare for All Texas is a nonprofit advocacy organization, and we are the Texas chapter of the Physicians for a National Health Program. Our mission is to educate the public on how a single-payer, Medicare for All healthcare system would provide affordable, quality healthcare to all of us. Our guest today is Jack Bernard, who before retirement was a senior healthcare executive with several national firms, as well as the former director of health planning for the state of Georgia. He is also a former chairman of the county commission and county Republican Party in a suburb of Atlanta, Georgia. And he'll be talking to us today about why, as a fiscal conservative and a former healthcare executive, he believes single-payer universal health care fits the values around health and money that both conservatives and progressives can get behind. He will help us debunk the myth that if you are conservative, you cannot be in favor of a single-payer universal health care system. And in fact, single-payer does fit quite well with many, many core conservative values. We'll be taking your calls during the show. Call us at 713-526-5738. It comes as a surprise to many Americans that the conservative and very autocratic 19th century Chancellor of Germany, Otto von Bismarck, is actually considered by many to be the father of universal national health insurance. Bismarck thought a nation had a moral obligation to provide some protection from misfortune to its citizens with a basic social safety net like Social Security and also a national health insurance program, an obligation that he called practical Christianity. But most of all, he was really a savvy politician, because by creating this forerunner of a national health insurance program, he effectively created a much stronger economy for Germany with much more productive workers. So there was less brain drain to other countries. Valuable workers stayed in Germany because it made more economic sense to work in Germany than in other nations.
Unlike Germany and every other industrialized country in the world, the United States is now the only country that fails to guarantee all of its citizens access to medical services. And not just progressives, but also conservatives in every other industrialized country support universal access to health care services in one form or another. It seems that a majority of American conservatives hold the mistaken view that many of their values are inconsistent with their ability to support a single-payer national health insurance. Conservatives generally see government as often restricting individual freedom, liberty, and the opportunity and ability to be productive. However, simply put, a fundamental and truly classic conservative argument in favor of universal access to health care offered by single-payer reform would be as follows. When people are ill or disabled, they are less able to take care of themselves or their dependents. When they're less able to take care of themselves and dependents, then they are also less able to be productive and contribute to the community. For the seriously and chronically ill, access to affordable quality care helps them be as independent and productive as they can be, lessening their dependency on our society. In addition, the freedom to choose any doctor or hospital which exists under single-payer reform is very consistent with conservative values. Currently, under the Affordable Care Act, insurance companies are still allowed to severely restrict this freedom to choose by use of the designations of either on or off network. Finally, from a conservative viewpoint, single payer is by far the most fiscally responsible approach to healthcare system reform because it is the most financially sustainable. It is the only approach that greatly reduces system-wide administrative waste by eliminating the massive bureaucracy required for providers to interact with countless insurance companies offering a mind-numbing number of different plans of coverage. In addition, only single-payer reform captures the cost savings offered by the bulk purchasing of drugs and durable medical equipment. For example, the Department of Veterans Affairs is allowed to negotiate for their drug prices in bulk. In those negotiations with drug companies, they therefore become the big gorilla in the room. As a direct result, the cost of drugs for veterans is half that paid by Medicare recipients. So as can be clearly argued, conservatives have no need to distance themselves from the single-payer health care reform movement. One such conservative, self-described Texas Republican Dr. David May, past chair of the Board of Governors and a Board of Trustees member of the American College of Cardiology, is a single-payer supporter because he believes the following. First, there is currently no real consumer choice in the existing system. Instead, we are effectively extorted by insurance companies. Second, complete transparency in cost and expense is needed with no cost shifting, which is only going to be possible with single payer. Third, with a single payer system, we could potentially collect real utilization data, real quality metrics, and have real accountability. Fourth, physicians should be in charge of health care and not the insurance companies and hospital systems. Now, insurance companies have too much control over what health care Americans get or don't get based on their bottom line and not based upon the health of the patient. The uniform price structure, finally, for services shifts incentives back to providing health care to patients that is offered by a single-payer health care system reform.
We're live on KPFT 90.1. The time is 9:38. This is Open Journal with Dr. Christine Adams and Dr. Joe Bach. We are talking today about how single-payer fits many core conservative values with our guest, Jack Bernard. Call us with your questions or your comments at 713-526-5738. Welcome, Jack.
Hi, how are you today?
Thank you so much for joining us. Could you talk to us a little bit about why you believe single payer is an issue that fits the core values for conservatives?
Well, to be quite honest with you, I don't think that there's any choice for the country long term except going to single payer or something along the lines of single payer, maybe with some modifications. My preference is Medicare for All. The reason I think Medicare for All is best is that it's very well accepted by the American public. I was a county commissioner and chairman of a county commission for quite a while here in rural Georgia outside of Atlanta. And the one or two programs that, frankly, even very conservative residents did not complain about were Social Security and Medicare. They're widely supported, whether you're conservative, liberal, or moderate. They're very well supported. And as opposed to a lot of government programs, Medicare is both efficient and effective. Government, and I'm not knocking government, but in a lot of ways, government is not very efficient, not very effective. If you look at VA right now, they're having a problem. So when we talk about socialized medicine, to me, you're talking about the mess that you've got with VA. When you're talking about healthcare reform, you're talking about single payer, and you're talking about Medicare for All, which is extremely efficient. Medicare runs about 3% overhead. Now, under the Affordable Care Act, insurance companies are complaining about having to bring their overhead down to 20% of premium. So if you could see that big gap there, all of that gap between the 3% and the 20% could go into direct patient care. And in fact, that's the biggest problem, I think, in the existing healthcare system, is that there's such a morass of private payers that it's very inefficient. A lot of money is going into overhead. A lot of money is going into marketing costs. And it's not going to the patient. So when you really look at it that way, whether you're conservative or liberal, it doesn't really matter. The best solution is Medicare for All. And I think there's a couple of reasons why that hasn't really happened, why it hasn't had the support in this country. And one is, frankly, the extensive lobbying by healthcare providers, big pharma, and most importantly, the insurance industry. The second reason is that a large part of the American public has been brainwashed into incorrectly believing higher costs and lower quality will result if we have a single payer, which places like Fox and right-wing talk radio indicate to be socialized medicine. Well, once again, it's not socialized medicine. What socialized medicine is, frankly, is more like the VA model, which does have problems and needs substantial reform. But Medicare for All uses a private delivery model. Doctors are in private practice. Hospitals can be, frankly, for-profit or not-for-profit, but they're not run by the government directly. I mean, very few hospitals are run by the government directly in this country.
Well, what would the role of government be, and how is that more cost effective? I mean, what do the insurance companies spend all that 20% on, and how is it that what would the role of government then be in a single payer, from your view?
Well, I don't want to be a demagogue about this. frankly, I mean, a lot of that goes to corporate salaries. You know, you take a look at some of the insurance executives, and they're making, $28 million a year. And that goes true in the hospital industry as well, by the way. A fellow that I used to report to directly, I'll leave his name nameless, but he runs a big hospital system. He's made $100 million in the last 10 years in salary and further compensation, stock options and bonuses. And he's sharp. I worked for him for 4 years. But is he worth $100 million in 10 years? I don't think so. And those are the kind of things that are running up overhead. Plus, when you've got people competing, competition sounds good. And it does work for a lot of things. It works if you're buying an automobile. But it doesn't work for healthcare, especially when healthcare insurance. You've got all these salesmen running around. They have to be compensated. And that marketing cost makes private pay insurance models very inefficient. And it's not just my opinion. It's a fact. And if you take a look at premiums in Texas, you can see what I'm saying is true. Premiums, last time I looked in Texas, as per a Commonwealth report, were $14,526 in 2010. What really is disturbing is that in 2003, premiums were only $9,575 for family premiums. So you can see the rise. It's over 50%. It's a 52% rise within seven years. And it's no different nationally, by the way. Family premiums have gone from about, actually they've doubled, almost doubled, in the same period of time. So, you know, it's out of control. And nationally, the projections are the premiums are going to rise to about $24,000, family premiums, by 2020. And what's happening here is the cost is being pushed from the corporation or the employer back to the employee. And that's becoming more and more unacceptable.
That's true. This is Open Journal with Dr. Christine Adams and Dr. Joe Bock, and we are talking about how single-payer fits conservative values. We'll be right back.
This is KPFT Houston. The time is 9:45. Here's a quick update on traffic and weather. On I-10, Katy Freeway in the managed lane, inbound before Highway 6, there's a two-vehicle accident. The right shoulder and right lane are affected. And there is heavy traffic on the 610 West Loop southbound from Shepherd to I-10, Katy Freeway. Travel time there is almost 18 minutes. Current temperature is 85 degrees and feels like 98. Skies are partly cloudy. Humidity is 84%. Today's forecast for Harris County, partly cloudy with a 20% chance of rain in the afternoon. Today's high will be around 91 degrees and low tonight 77 degrees. Air quality is in the good range. Ultraviolet index is in the very high range. Please stay tuned after the community spotlight for Bird Note, followed by Wide Open Spaces at 10 o'clock, and then the Heartbeat of Africa at 1 o'clock. And now back to today's community spotlight, healthcare reform.
Welcome back. We are on Open Journal. We're talking about how single-payer fits conservative values with our guest, Jack Bernard. Please call us at 713-526-5738. Jack, I was interested in the idea of competition, because that is true. A lot of conservatives think that if we have competition between insurance companies, that will actually reduce costs, although we have had competition with insurance companies for a long time and our costs keep going up. And it seems to me that what single payer would do is it actually puts competition more appropriately where it should be, which would be between providers. If I can go see anybody I want, then they have to compete for my business, so they need to have pretty high quality in order to stay in business. So it seems like it would better place the idea of competition, which is an important value for conservatives.
The entire concept of competition is moving into a tangent, actually, within the healthcare field. And the reason it's not the same in healthcare as anything else is you don't really have a measure of quality. You've got a bedside manner, you've got a nice hospital building, but you don't really know what the quality of care is within that hospital or within the doctor's office. I've got two sons who are physicians. When I ask them, how do I find a doctor, they sort of stare at me with blank looks on their face and say, if you want to move to Knoxville or Lexington, which is where my sons practice, we can find you a very good doctor, but I'm not sure how you find one in Atlanta. And that's part of the problem with competition in the healthcare field. You go to your doctor and ask for a referral, you may end up with his golf buddy. So it's not really as simple as it is with a car, let's say. You know, you go in, you can get the powers analysis of the how people like their cars and how well they've held up and so on and so on. You don't have that kind of information in the healthcare field, so it's completely different in healthcare than it is in anything else. And frankly, you mentioned earlier that it's not the competitive system with healthcare insurance isn't really working here. Well, it's not. If you take a look at the per capita cost of U.S. healthcare, it ran about $7,920 per capita, and that compares to $3,323 in Sweden and $2,686 in Italy. Those countries have got better health care outcomes, mortality and morbidity, than we do.
We have a comment or a question from a caller, Ariel. Ariel, you're on the line. Go ahead, please.
Thank you. Comment regarding the what was being said about the VA system. Most people get their insurance through their employer, and every year they have to choose which carrier they're going to use. That's the biggest racket. The carrier's only duty is, number one, to make a profit, and number two, to keep that person from dying for one more year. And they're going to do it at the least possible cost, even if they don't give optimal care. Now, the VA, some 20 years ago, realized that they're going to be taking care of their patient population for the rest of their lives. And the most economic way to do that is by, you know, keeping them well. As a result, the VA now has probably the best system as far as actual medical care in the whole country. They have some major administrative problems with eligibility determinations and managers who mess up with the appointment systems and so forth, and we've heard a lot about that lately. But the actual medical care is about the best thing in the country because it's run by people who are on salary, who don't stand to make ridiculous bonuses and so forth. And their whole idea is to keep people healthy, even if it costs apparently a little bit more up front than what might be paid by the insurance company.
So I think Ariel brings up a very good point about incentives, so that a single payer or even a socialized medicine program would have incentive to keep you well, be more of a wellness system because it costs the system more money, you know, if you're sick. So, go ahead,
Jeff. My basic point is the fact that that is the opposite of the way it is now. Right now, the insurance companies are trying to make money and just try to spend the least possible amount to keep that person from dying for one more year, after which it becomes another company's problem.
Ariel certainly makes some good points, and if you take a look at the British system, the British system works well in that country, and frankly, if you want to get private healthcare in Britain, you can. There are hospitals that, at least I know at one time, were owned by American companies that operate in England for people who want to opt out of the National Health Service. And doctors and patients are generally pretty happy in the English system, and frankly, it costs less than half what ours cost. So that's probably a good system for England. VA here, this shouldn't be a discussion of VA. There are pros and cons with VA. But what I do find to be interesting is when I talk to people about VA who are vets, they generally love it. And then the next word out of their mouth is, I hate national health insurance. And that's sort of counterintuitive. But that's part of the problem here. I had breakfast with a congressman a few years back, and one of the people at the table was a vet. And he was telling the congressman in 2008, this was, in 2009 when Obamacare ACA was first being proposed, he was saying national health insurance is unconstitutional. And then I asked him at the table, I said, well, where do you get your insurance? Oh, I go to the VA.
Right, right. You're listening to KPFT 90.1. The time is 9:52. I'm Dr. Christine Adams with Dr. Joe Bach. Our guest today is Jack Bernard, and we are talking about how single payer fits many core conservative values. Jack, what are some of the concerns that conservatives have about single payer, and are these concerns realistic or reasonable?
Well, you know, certainly some of them are reasonable. The big problem, I think, again, is that conservatives in this country have been brainwashed about health care. The fact is that politicians like to say we've got the best health care in the world, and why change it? Well, number one, it's not the best health care in the world. If you look at OECD studies or NIM studies or NIH studies or the WHO study, if you look at any of those, we come out way down on the list in terms of the quality and the cost of and access for our healthcare system. So a big part of the challenge here is taking out the Rush Limbaughs of the world, who end up, frankly, just brainwashing the people who normally would benefit the most from a Medicare for All system. I've talked to people who are on SSDI, and they don't support the Affordable Care Act because they don't support an expanded role of government, but they're on SSDI. So we've got a lot of hypocrisy within our system right now, and that's the problem. The problem is, and this is driven to some extent by your lobbyists in Washington, the AHA, the AMA, the big pharmacy companies, and most importantly, the insurance company. If you, even on PBS, PBS here in Georgia is mostly, it's not mostly, but at least partially funded through insurance companies. They're one of the main sponsors on the NewsHour. So there's the role of money in our society and in our political society. It frankly has a very negative effect, and you know, until we can educate the population as to the real facts, we're in trouble. I mean, that's I'm retired healthcare executive, and one of the things I've been trying to do through op-eds and letters to the editor around the country is to try to educate people. Actually, I did a piece in the Abilene paper last year. Abilene Reporter News, but it's a long haul. It's not something that's going to happen overnight. It's something we just need to keep pushing on. And the expansion of Medicare for All, it makes sense because Medicare is efficient and it's effective. And it's, as we talked about earlier, using the figures, it's much more efficient and effective than private sector insurance programs. And once again, I'm not saying that the government is always better, and the government in a lot of cases is not better. But in the case of healthcare insurance, it is better. Insurance company profits have increased 250% in the last decade, and that's coming out of our premiums.
And our health.
And our health.
Thank you very much, Jack, for being our guest today. Help shape the conversation on health care reform by emailing us with your comments and concerns about health care reform at info@healthcareforalltexas. We will use those emails to help us decide on what to talk about on our future shows. Follow us on Twitter and like us on Facebook. The Houston chapter of HCFAT meets on the second Thursday of each month at St. Paul's United Methodist Church. Please join us.
You have been listening to Open Journal, KPFT's experiment in community-inspired radio. Since 1970, KPFT has been a unique source on the Houston airwaves. Visit kpft.org to support this station. KPFT listener members are welcome to produce an Open Journal. Prospective producers must fill out an Open Journal request form, which is available at our website at kpft.org. The program director welcomes your feedback on every Open Journal. To get in touch with the program director, send an email to pd@kpft.org or call 713-526-4000, extension 308. Your feedback via social media is also welcome. We're at KPFT on Twitter and KPFT Houston on Facebook. Please stay tuned for Wide Open Spaces up next. You can view our complete program schedule at kpft.org. And thank you for tuning in to today's Open Journal here on Pacifica Radio, 90.1 in Houston, kpft.org worldwide.
This is Bird Note. In September, a river of raptors flows through Veracruz State in eastern Mexico. In his book, Living on the Wind, Scott Wiedensahl describes counting the birds there as they circle in kettles on columns of rising warm air, and then drift steadily south. Nothing in a lifetime of birdwatching had prepared me for this spectacle. The kettles grew to almost frightening proportions, 20 or 30,000 hawks in each one. From 2 to 3 o'clock, we counted 126,516 broad-winged hawks, nearly 46,000 of them in one 10-minute period. The next hour, there were even more, along with nearly 11,000 turkey vultures. A steady stream of kestrels was moving low along the horizon, passing at a rate of 5 per minute, their wings flashing in the sun like a thin reflection off the distant gulf. And so it went for hours. From our hot, dusty rooftop in Cardell, we'd counted more than 435,000 raptors. As our sense of numbed disbelief gave way to comprehension, we realized we'd witnessed, by far, the heaviest hawk migration ever recorded anywhere in the world. Since that day in 1992, the record has been far eclipsed. Some days more than a million birds have been counted passing through the narrow, vulnerable corridor of Veracruz. Today's show brought to you